welcome to the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast, where we delve into the innovations that are shaping the future of trade finance. I'm your host, Doris Kononovich, and today we're joined by Edward Oboymov. He's a CEO and co-founder of Etu, a London-based fintech company that is revolutionizing trade documentation through blockchain technology. Now, Etu's platform offers digital solutions for creating and transferring electronic bills of lading, EBLs, aiming to enhance efficiency, security, and compliance in global trade. We're also going to be chatting about the recent pilot project with Singapore's IMDA and the XCC network, which showcased the potential of using EBLs as collateral for trade financing loans, signaling what I think is a significant shift in how trade finance can be accessed and managed. Now, Edward brings a wealth of experience in digital trade solutions, and we're really excited to explore how Etu is addressing the challenges and opportunities in modernizing trade finance. Let's dive in. Edward, lovely to have you here in the TFDI.
Likewise. Thank you, Doris, for having me.
And a warm welcome to the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative. You are recent members as well of the community. We're really looking forward to kind of seeing you grow with this community as well.
Thank you. Thank you. That's great to join this initiative.
All right, let's go into the first question that I tend to ask most founders. It's really about sharing the inspiration about Etu. Now, what were the challenges in trade finance documentation that you were seeking to kind of address when you founded this company?
First, so myself personally, I come from the family which was in the maritime logistics and the international trade business for a number of generations. I have worked in the family business myself and have seen from early age the challenges that businesses involved in the logistics and international trade face when dealing with paper documentation and manual processes involved in, let's say, administrative side of organizing the international trade. So this was kind of the initial frustration and inspiration to start Etu as a business. We started out as a company a bit more than 5 years ago, initially as a software development firm, offering pretty much dedicated software development services for shipping companies, freight forwarding companies, and commodity traders, helping them to optimize the documentation management and documentation drafting processes. And then a couple of years in, we shifted towards developing our own product.
I find that a lot of times it's always frustration that really brings out the entrepreneurs and people. You always find that something is a little bit more inadequate and you're trying to find solutions around it. And it's really good to see how Etu has grown since then. And, you know, speaking about that growth, since your recent pilot with IMDA and XCC Network, you've utilized electronic bills of lading as collateral for trade finance. Tell me a little bit more about this process. How did it work and what were the implications for liquidity within trade finance?
Sure. So the important challenge that many small and medium-sized businesses involved in international trade and even more pressingly commodity traders are facing is access to trade finance and access to more liquidity to fund the growth of their operations. What we have seen in the market that small and medium-sized traders which do below $400 million in annual trade volume usually don't have access to bank trade finance and have to rely on either extremely expensive unsecured credit or alternative sources of financing secured by their collateral, which is usually quite limited. So what we have allowed in this pilot case to them to do is to use their in-transit cargo as collateral for the loan, helping the commodity trader involved in the pilot to decrease the interest rate that he's paying for the loan nearly twice, from 24% APR to effective rate of 14% APR. At the same time, opening up the new investment opportunity for the alternative credit lenders, which previously haven't really had access to the trade finance investment opportunity, which was kind of reserved for trade financing banks, as well as a few specialized trade finance funds.
What has been your key takeaway from this experience?
I think the key takeaway is that there is a tremendous interest among small and medium-sized players within the international trade market to get more liquidity into their operations. This is evidenced by both, let's say, anecdotal evidence of us talking with our clients on the electronic documentation side, as well as our network. And generally, the industry research where World Bank estimates the trade finance gap to be around $2.5 trillion a year, and it's rapidly growing every year. So I think there is kind of generally a lot of space in the market for new solutions to come and help facilitate the flow of liquidity into this trade finance gap and help to solve this challenge.
Absolutely. And we'll talk a bit more about how you've seen adoption across working with different counterparties. You also had some sort of a transaction with the metal holding, and which demonstrating the practical use again or application of ETU's solutions. What can you share about the feedback you received from participants and how that has kind of informed your ongoing development so far?
In terms of the feedback, there was a overwhelmingly positive feedback on both the lender or capital provider side as well as the borrower side. For the capital provider, we have been able to shrink the time it took to kind of organize and originate the loan from the process, which would typically take them weeks, to just a couple of hours on ETU. And for the borrower, as mentioned, we decreased the effective interest rate that they were paying nearly twice, which is definitely welcome in the kind of current tumultuous world, where especially in the commodity trading industry, where the profit margins are usually quite slim. So decrease in the cost of financing was a, I would say, most important driving factor for them to adopt the new technology.
That is so good to hear that sort of progress within this industry. Let's talk about your use of blockchain technology now. How are you leveraging a blockchain to ensure that the security and authentication of electronic trade documents? I know that there's the ETDA, I know, kind of guiding the framework around this. What advantages are you seeing here over traditional methods so far? You've said a bit about that.
Sure. I would say there are two core advantages, which address, in my opinion, two main existing challenges within the trade finance industry is a risk of fraud and speed of transaction execution. In terms of the risk of fraud, usually the key risk which trade finance originators have to address is document forgery or double financing of the same cargo within multiple lenders. We prevent this by allowing the title for the cargo to be issued not in the form of the paper bill of lading, but as a digital asset on the public blockchain, which allows us to prevent the double financing as well as document forgery and creates an immutable audit trail of the cargo ownership throughout the entire shipment. And then in terms of speed of the execution of transaction, that's extremely important as well, because usually the duration of the loan is roughly equivalent to the duration of the journey. In case of our pilot transactions that we did, this were short route shipments, which took under 2 weeks from the cargo leaving port until the cargo delivery. Usually, this type of shipments are not getting trade finance at all, because simply exchange of documentation between the members of the supply chain, which were all located in different countries. So the shipper was located in Turkey, the consignee in Ukraine, and the financier is in Switzerland. Simply sending documents between those countries using DHL would have taken nearly the 2 weeks that the cargo was on sale, making it completely unfeasible to finance this type of transactions. With electronic documentation, we solved this issue and enabled additional liquidity for the traders on this route.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, I've had conversations where people have said, yeah, well, aren't there also risks with, you know, digital technology as well? People creating fraudulent documents and uploading them online using AI. It's a whole different kettle of fish. But, you know, I've always also said that there is risk in trade finance due to digitalization, as there is risk in any other part or sector in the world. I mean, we've recently had like a whole huge supply supermarket chain getting hacked online. But, you know, we learn the lessons from that and we keep pushing forward because, as you said, this is something that makes, you know, the process more transparent, faster. And, you know, it's just an easy no-brainer, I think, at some point. Okay, a bit on compliance, because this is really crucial. How are you aligning with international standards like ICC's Uniform Rule for Digital Trade Transactions, MLETR? What has been your lessons in terms of adopting these and using that within your framework?
Sure. So as, let's say, guiding principle for the platform development was always a model law on electronic transferable records, the MLETR. The specific, let's say, implementation of the MLETR and the local law on which we are relying is the English law and the implications of the Electronic Trade Documents Act, which was passed in the UK in the end of 2023, which equates on the legal basis the electronic trade documentation to the their paper equivalents, meaning that within our platform, the electronic version of the bill of lading or any other trade documents would be recognized as a completely legal equivalent, which would stand in English court the same way the paper document would. During the, let's say, transaction and when using our platform, all users of the platform accept terms and conditions and subject themselves to the English law, which they are allowed to do under the freedom of contract provisions. And I think it's important to note that over 80% of international trade deals and bill of lading issuances in general are already conducted under the English law. So we're not like pushing the new legislation upon the members of the international trade transactions. In terms of standards and regulations, I think the important milestone for us was approval of ETU EBL by the IGPNI, the International Group of P&I Clubs. We spent more than 2 years going through the due diligence and approval process with IGPNI and have received approval beginning of last year, which marked a kind of significant milestone for us to be able to implement our solution and roll it out to the market. From our experience, it's extremely challenging to push any electronic trade documentation solution which is not IGPNI approved upon the market due to resistance from the shipping companies, because non-IGPNI approved EBL and electronic trade documentation solutions pose a risk of compromising their P&I insurance. So this was an important, let's say, milestone in terms of industry verification and approval for us as a platform.
That makes so much sense because, you know, interoperability is the maker or breaker of, you know, any business for digitalization within this framework. And, you know, just on that as well, you know, you've had some integrations with Trade Trust, the framework, which is also helping to enhance the legal recognition of digital trade documents. How has this integration as well improved interoperability and trust amongst your stakeholders? And within that ecosystem as well, has that made things a bit more easy? Have you faced any more challenges as well in terms of systems talking to systems as well?
Sure. So in terms of interoperability and general use of Trade Trust, I think two key benefits from working with a Trade Trust framework. First one is ability for the members of the supply chain to verify the originality of the electronic trade document issued on the platform via the Trade Trust verification function. This creates kind of this, let's say, centralized control registry maintained by the Singapore government affiliated entity, which is important for many trade finance providers we have been in touch with. And in terms of interoperability and ability from the technological perspective for any Trade Trust connected or, as they call it, Trade Trust enabled application to pretty much freely exchange digital assets and digital trade documents between each other. There are obviously additional layer of legal complexities on top of it, which we still need to solve solve on the one-by-one basis with each individual provider right now. But I think there is a great development from IMDA in terms of introducing the model set of terms and legal terms and conditions that they have published recently, which would hopefully help to drive further interoperability within the, let's say, electronic trade documentation space internationally, and help to smooth the legal side of things as well as the technological one.
And just on that as well, just on the regulatory landscape, working across jurisdictions, can sometimes play its role in creating more complexity. What role does ITU play in promoting regulatory harmonization, and how have you been able to adopt, the regulatory shapeshift to all the regulatory landscapes in different jurisdictions when it comes to what is required, from a particular client versus what is not from another?
Sure. I would say that the core guiding principle that we use is that all users of our platform are subject to English law and submit the, let's say, the transaction that they're performing within the platform to the English law and follow the rules of the platform in this sense. However, in terms of interoperability, we're actively involved in all key industry initiatives, including the interoperability initiatives by IMDA Trade Trust, by DCSA, as well as a number of other organizations. So we try to make our contribution as a company involved in this industry towards the development of the interoperability standards, both on technological as well as legal side. I also had an honor to be part of the industry advisory group to the UK Parliament during the development of the Electronic Trade Documents Act in the UK, which I believe was a significant milestone for the international trade and adoption of electronic trade documentation within the international trade.
That's incredible. And I think this is really the way to go to actually show others, the path and what you need to do to be a part of this growing community of people who are adopting digitization and the frameworks across all jurisdictions. I'm actually quite curious because you're software first, so for a lot of people who are technology facing, this is pretty much day and night and easy. But have you faced any challenges or pushback in terms of adoption where you've had a business say, but we've done this for 140 years, on paper, and this is the way that we've always known and trusted, and this is the way my business needs to be done. Can you incorporate this into what you do in the more traditional finance ways? What's your experience been around that?
Sure. So I would say that's a very significant challenge for any business trying to disrupt the long existing practices. And logistics is a infamously change resistant industry. The paper bills of lading being the great example of that, pretty much being unchanged for hundreds of years. I think during the development of ETDA, it was mentioned that the previous law governing the bills of lading was from the, I think, 19th century, which existed in the UK, and kind of we're in the 21st century now. It was still the same until recently. I think the way to overcome this resistance to change within the industry is always with tangible benefits to all members of the supply chain. And my personal view is that digitalization on its own is not enough to push the adoption of the electronic bills of lading across the board. That simply replacing courier post with a digital version of the document for many companies is not big enough of a reason and not big enough of a motivation to change to the digital systems. And we have seen this headfirst ourselves. When saving a couple of days on courier post and the $100 on the courier fees is not that big of a difference if you're doing a multi-million dollar commodity trade deals. Our answer to this is tangible benefits in terms of getting access to additional liquidity, new sources of trade finance for the participants of the transaction. So the benefits that we bring to shippers is the trade finance that they are trying to get actively and are not able to get within the existing paper-based setup. And for the logistics providers, its ability to actually bring additional volume and bring new customers to their trade routes and to their services by enabling those customers to get financing in turn. So kind of bringing those tangible benefits in terms of new liquidity and new business, I believe is a good enough reason for all members of the supply chain to adopt new digital technologies.
Absolutely. I mean, if it gets you what you're looking for, why not? Dip your toe in, try something different. It's been there for 140 years over. We've got to keep moving with the times and keep exploring as human beings what possibilities there are. And I think ITU is doing fantastic at kind of showing, leading the charge on how this can be a very seamless framework. And there is really no need to suffer looking for funding and liquidity when there are opportunities here. Beyond blockchain, are there any other emerging technologies that ITU is exploring to further improve trade finance operations?
I would say it's kind of building up on the capabilities which blockchain allows us to leverage. Unlike with paper documents, each bill of lading on our platform is issued as a on-chain digital asset on the XDC network in this case, which opens up the possibility to use smart contract powered automations in order to streamline the process of pretty much all administrative actions, which traditionally would rely on validation and physical handover of the paper bill of lading. All of those processes can be now streamlined using smart contracts, and we're actively working on creating those smart contract powered automations, leveraging the smart contract technology.
Edward, it's been so lovely speaking to you. But before I let you go, I want to just lean a little bit about what you hope to get from your membership from the TFDI. Obviously, we are a consortium. We're made up of huge number of members from the capital markets and supply chain finance, et cetera. What's your vision for the future of trade finance, and how do you hope to position yourself within the TFDI as well?
Sure. So my firm belief is that the trade finance gap is that big of a challenge that there's no single company that can solve it on its own, and that the solution to this issue and let's say conquest of this market would come from collaboration between multiple companies. And I believe that participation in the TFDI initiative is an opportunity for us to find collaborators, partners among other companies which are tackling this market, tackling this issue of digitalization of the international trade, tackling the issue of lack of access to funding within the trade finance sector. And I think the core interest and the opportunity for us, and that's the message which I would like to also include within this recording, within this podcast, is that we are open to collaboration, whether that's companies which can benefit from our service in some way, or which believe that they have the similar target audience to the target audience that we are serving. I don't think there are, as mentioned, competitors within this market. There's always a collaboration opportunity, even if we are providing a similar service in one way or another. I believe there is room for many more companies to come and conquer this market, because that's truly a so-called blue ocean within the international trade and trade finance. So if you are interested to discuss something further, please feel free to reach out. More than happy to chat.
Amazing. Someone once taught me they're not competitors, they're all complementary to the business. It's a very nice way to look at it. Well, Edward, thank you so much for sharing your insights and your really innovative work that ITU is doing to transform trade finance. I think it's good to see digital solutions that are paving the way for a really more effective and efficient inclusion of trade finance into the ecosystem. So thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for this opportunity to explain a bit more about what we are working on and the opportunity to join the TFDI initiative.
The pleasure is ours. To our listeners, Thank you as well for listening, tuning in to the Trade Finance Distribution Initiative podcast. Do stay connected with us for more discussions on the evolving landscape of trade finance. Until the next time, I'm Doris Kaminovich. See you next time. Bye-bye.